Okay, thinking about the letters of John now, we pointed out that these three little letters are wonderful illustrations of the value of balance when we come to think about spiritual things. We've started the first letter, like, you guys can be assured that Christ Jesus has done enough to save you. And you can rest assured that in Him there is life. Okay, don't let anybody come along and tell you that there is not life in Him. Second letter said, now, if somebody does come along saying that the Son of God hasn't come in the flesh and that there's life in Him, then don't encourage him. Don't support him. Don't help him to spread a message which is destructive to your hope. And then the third letter comes along now and says, and if anybody does come along with that message that saves and that tells what God has done for us and tells who Christ is, then you're doing a good work if you do help him and you do support him and you do encourage him and helping other people to know where there's life. So that balance is a helpful thing. Do you remember what three words we have found prominent, especially in 2 John, and we'll see them again in 3 John? Remember, I wrote them up here last week. I know you guys remember everything I ever write down. What are those three key words?
Love
is one of them, all right. What's the next one?
Truth
is the second one. And the third one? All right, it's a form of fellowship, but especially hospitality we've been talking about. Truth. How do love, truth, and hospitality in the sense of support for the work of the gospel go together? How do they fit together? How is balance maintained in that? Now, 3 John is I'll say this about this little letter, and I think you'll notice this. This one is more positive. This is a little letter which tries to commend and affirm good work where it's been done. And in that way, it's so valuable for us. It teaches us a lesson not only about a particular thing, but also about leadership and about fellowship and the pocket. Find something to commend and then encourage it. Type thing. Secondly, it's more personal. No names were used in 2 John, but in this letter, there are three characters who involve, besides John. There is a one named Gaius, there's one named Diotrephes, and there's one named Demetrius. And we'll notice that part of it. We'll be reminded that in the Lord's work in congregational settings, it moves past great doctrines and theories and inevitably gets down to people and their personalities. And you see that in this little letter here. And then the third thing is this letter is more practical. It's like, all right, how do you take what 1 John and 2 John have said, and have you heard in our prayers, and apply it to our daily lives? Have you heard that? And how do you do that? And that's what this little letter will be about. So you take the same three words, love, truth, and hospitality, and then you put names to it, and you figure out how to practice this in a healthy way. In a balanced way. That's where we're headed with this one. All right, so let's look at 1 John to start, at 3 John now to the beginning of it. Notice the just the greeting in verse 1. There are three things in it that we probably need to mention. So John, verse 1 for us, please.
The elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth.
All right, look at it again now. You have some key terms here. First, the elder, Who is this?
Third John kind of gives that away, doesn't it? It's interesting that he is introducing himself as an older man and as someone that all of his readers are probably going to recognize and to take seriously. John is regarded as the one of the apostles who lived the farthest past the death and resurrection of Jesus. Most assume that he lived until somewhere in the 90s A.D. We don't know exactly at what point this letter is written, but he has respect and authority and is known in that way. And then notice the second phrase here is to the beloved Gaius. Talk a little bit about Gaius first. Gaius is said to have been, by one writer I found, the most common name in the Roman world at the time. There are several Gaiuses who appear, or you'll hear pronounced sometimes Gaius. I've seen it that way in the movies more. But there are several people by this name in the New Testament. There's one we meet at Corinth. There's one that's with Paul in the riot at Ephesus in Acts 19. There's one at Derbe in Acts 20 who travels with Paul. He's from one is at Corinth, one's a Macedonian, one's from a town called Derbe. So you see, we don't really know which one this is, if he's one of those or not. But what's the key thing about him that stands out here? All right, the beloved Gaius. And that might mean that he is especially beloved to John, or that he is known and loved by his fellow members in the congregation where these men live. If we were to take 2 John and think that it's written to a congregation, as we suggested, and if we take 3 John and think maybe this is written to some people in that congregation, maybe we'd be on the right track. In the original language, we're told that the word love or beloved appears 3 times in the first 11 words in this letter. So you kind of get that. This is not a letter to scold anybody. This is a letter to in a tone of affection to someone who is beloved. And then John says, whom I love in truth. All right. So if that would suggest to me that this beloved means by the church in general, and then this means that he's also someone that John loves. What else stands out to you in that phrase, that second this phrase here?
Truth.
All right. The combination now of love in truth. Truth is the realm or sphere in which it's operative, and love is the relationship that exists in the truth. Some think that it means that John is telling whom I truly love. But the balance of 2 John and the rest of this letter and the phrasing suggest that this is the right way to say it. So we start with that. There's a relationship that exists. Now let's look at verses 2 through 4 next here. 2 through 4. Matt, would you read that, please? Borrow Sarah's Bible and you read that for us. Okay.
Beloved, I pray that all may go well.
Louder.
Beloved, I pray that all may go well with you, and that you may be in good health as it goes well with your soul. For I rejoiced greatly when the brothers came and testified to your truth, as indeed you are walking in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth.
All right, now, knowing John, we've gotten to know John a little bit, and we know that he makes his point often by repeating words or phrases. Which one stood out to you in that little paragraph?
Truth.
He used it like six times in this letter, in these few verses, so you get... John is not, to John, the elements of the faith matter, doctrine or theology, if we say it like that, matters, not just a minor detail and inconvenience. But in this little paragraph, there are several things that stand out about his relationship with Gaius. First, the word beloved again, then his prayer for Gaius is interesting. What does he pray for him? I pray that all may go well with you. How else is that phrase translated?
May prosper.
May prosper. All right, and the word means to make progress. To be safe and sound. It's what the going well or the word prospering means. And then, I think it's a very, very vivid idea that he uses that on your journey, everything, you may be safe and sound, that you may be in good health as it goes well with your what? So I'm praying that you may prosper, that everything may go as well with other things in your life as it is with your soul. Would you rather have that prayer, or would you rather have the prayer, I'm praying that things may go as well with your soul as in your job and in your possessions and in your fun in your life? Which way would be more hopeful for you? That's a thought-provoking thing, isn't it? And what does this tell you? That this prayer could be uttered, what does that tell you about Gaius?
He's faithful and...
That he is a man whose relationship with the Lord is what it should be. He's a person whose spiritual health is good, who is also maybe making progress or is known to be someone who is growing in the Lord, and John's prayer for him is that everything else in his life may go that way. I don't know if that sort of gently implies that maybe there are other things, that other challenges that Gaius has or not. I don't know if that's reading too much into it, but it could be that if you read between the lines, that's there too. Anyway, if we could, when we say to each other, pray for me, might this be a good way for people who want to balance love and truth and hospitality to pray for each other? I pray for Jonathan that he may prosper and be in health and everything like he is with his soul. Wouldn't that be a...
It seems to kind of place priorities.
It does, doesn't it?
The soul's the most important.
All right, the soul, it would be the most important thing, and then... all other progress would be sort of need to be in keeping with that. Now, what about verse 3? What does verse 3 tell us that we think about human relations in a congregation? For I rejoiced greatly when the brothers came and testified to your truth. What does that say to you? It may well be, if you think about this, that there had been brothers who had been on a Christian mission
who had passed through wherever Gaius lived, and he has helped them on their way, and they have brought John word that Gaius is faithful. They testified to your truth, as indeed you are walking in the truth. Now let's look at two parts of this. First, what does your truth and that you are walking in the truth mean to us? What does that say? What's Gaius doing there? They testified to your truth and that you're walking in the truth.
He's living the way Christ would have him.
All right, that he is living the way the Lord wants him to live. He not only holds to the truth, doctrinally speaking, but he is living it in his everyday life. There is a balance between, one writer said, between creed and conduct. Between what he professes and what he practices. I heard someone say one time, he is a mighty poor preacher who cannot preach better than he can practice. They were saying it's easier to say it than it is to do it, and there's some truth to that. But this is a man who was doing both. That's a high thing. Now, the other thing, and by the way, this is what the walking in the truth means, living in it in everyday life, having a lifestyle that's in keeping with the truth. And then truth means not only that he holds to something that's objectively true, but he's an honest man and a sincere man, and he doesn't say one thing and then do another in other ways. Now, the other thing about this that's really interesting, I want you to think about this. The brothers came and they testified to your truth. What leadership principle is John using in that statement?
Well, as elders, they're supposed to be thought of as by other people in a good way.
All right. To be a good reporter.
Right.
All right, that would be right. Can you think of anything else? Just on a human basis now, what is John doing here that is important? I can make the point by asking in a different way. How do you feel if you hear from someone else that someone has said to that someone else a positive thing about you?
That's encouraging.
All right. Is it more impactful if someone says to you some positive thing, or is it more impactful if you hear from someone else that a positive thing has been said about you without your being there? Which is more impactful?
I think
the latter, right? So, what John is doing, and especially if there's a chance that this letter might have been read out loud in a local church, which it might have been, if you see what's happening, John is saying, people that you have helped came and told us that you are a faithful man who is walking in love and truth. And that is, again, a practice. If we should learn to pray for one another from this, then we should also learn here something about how to encourage one another. Say something positive about someone who is not there to someone else. That leaves no doubt that you're not simply trying to butter someone up. You have nothing to gain from it. And if word gets back to the person you've spoken positively about it, then it's going to be so uplifting to you. It's not manipulative, it's just an honorable report in that way. Now, verse 4 is the next interesting. By the way, y'all are allowed to talk if you have a comment or observation.
That's the ultimate of letting your light shine.
All right, I agree with that, Carl. That is the ultimate of being a positive influence, and it's leadership without intending to be leading, if you think about it. John says in verse 4, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. And the definite article, the, is present in the original in this verse here. So we're talking about the practicing the faith, living in keeping with what the Lord says, making that their way of life. Now, what might the phrase "my children" here? What might that suggest to you about the relationship between John and Gaius?
You have a different relationship somehow with one that you have influenced, led them to the truth.
All right. I think Yvonne is, I think she's on the right track, is what I think about it. I think it suggests that maybe John had been instrumental in Gaius is becoming a Christian to start with. And that there is a different relationship between them in that way. Now, in 1 John, John often talked to his readers, addressed his readers as my little children. And we surmise that this is a way of him describing his affection for them. But in this case, it is personal to Gaius. And he has heard that Gaius is walking in the truth. And what effect does it have on John? Yes, Eddie?
I was going to mention before you started out, I thought Paul does basically the same thing when he writes to Timothy.
Yes. Paul, this is a tool in a lot of Paul's letters, actually, where he'll say this to Timothy, and Timothy will be his child in the faith. He'll be Timothy's father. But he's also at Corinth. He's their father in the faith in 1 Corinthians 4. And Paul also uses the positive things he's heard. If you read 1 Thessalonians, for example, they tell us about your growth in your faith and so forth, your faith and your love. So that's something that's present. I think if you look at Jesus, you'll see it in Jesus' practices too. You'll find it. You ought to read the gospel sometimes to watch for situations that Jesus commended, like Mary's deed in anointing him, or the widow's generosity at the treasury at the temple, or the centurion. I like the centurion in Matthew chapter 8, where he says, "I have not found so great a faith in Israel as in this man here," or sometimes the Samaritan woman who pleaded with him, "Woman, great is your faith." You know, that kind of thing would be part of the lesson here. So,
Bill, as a teacher of children in Bible classes, there's no greater joy than years later seeing that child mature and become a leader of some kind in church work.
Kay has told me that same thing about how she feels. And there are some people here that you've had that impact on too. And I agree with what you're saying.
It really touches your heart when you see them.
Yeah, I agree with that. You think of the statement Jesus made about having fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters and stuff 100-fold. When you left thanks to follow him, We forget that the other part of that is that in serving him, you also end up with children and grandchildren and so forth, 100-fold. I thought at Bible camp this year, I have grand campers. In some cases, I have grand counselors. I've almost been there, so.
Well, and it's not just with the guys.
That's right.
It's with the young girls, too, you see.
I agree with
Christian
that.
Christian wives and the ones now teaching instead of being taught.
Amen to that. And the ones who have often the real influence in a congregation are people like that. And we thank you for mentioning that. Now, what kind of tone would you say that John has set just in these first four verses of this letter?
Positive, encouraging.
All right. Positive, encouraging. Are you going to want to hear the rest of what he has to say? I think so. And if you are wanting Gaius to keep on doing what he has been doing, has there been enough said in these four verses to cause him to want to do that? So really, without there being any further instruction, a great part of the message of this letter would have been served right here just in the beginning. Now, I'm not saying don't come back to class next week. Now, please notice from this point now, the rest of this little letter addresses three people. First, Gaius in verses 5 through 8, their instructions to him. And then concerning, I don't know if he's really addressing Diotrephes in verses 9 and 10, but he is addressing the Diotrephes problem, at least in those two verses. And then in 11 and 12, he speaks with regard to a brother named Demetrius. Now here's the thing. Gaius is some sort of a leader in the congregation where he lives. He's a servant of the Lord. Perhaps he's an elder. I don't know about that. But then Diotrephes is another member of the congregation, perhaps in leadership, who likes to have the power and the authority. And he's going to take the approach, all right, in order to be sure we don't encourage any wrong thing, let's just not let anybody come here. that sort of. And then Demetrius is a brother who's involved in Christian in the mission of the gospel in some way, and he's someone who's going to need the help of people like Gaius is now. I want to take a minute to remind us again of what we mean by hospitality. We've commented about this before, but hospitality is the means by which Christian mission was accomplished in the day and age when people don't have money on their own to make these trips on behalf of the gospel, and there are not places for them to stay. Hospitality is love of strangers. Philizenos, I believe, in the original language. Love of strangers. And all of us are taught to be people who are not forgetful to entertain strangers. Some people have cared for angels in that way without knowing it. Hebrews 13. We're taught to practice hospitality without grumbling. 1 Peter 4 and verse 7, 8, somewhere along in there. We're taught to show hospitality to one another in Romans 12. Jesus taught in Matthew 25, I was a stranger, and you, what?
Took me in.
Took me in. How did you do that? By taking in the least of these, my brothers, if you read that passage. Matthew 10 and verse 40 says, whoever receives you, receives me. But it was in the setting of his sending his disciples on the mission of taking the gospel of the kingdom to other communities, to people in other places. So I'm suggesting that in this place, the idea of showing this kind of hospitality should be thought of as assisting in the mission of taking the gospel to other places. That's what we're talking about here. It doesn't mean we shouldn't show kindness and have each other in our homes and so forth, just as a way of life otherwise, but this isn't a particular way of helping helping in the task of taking the gospel to other places.
In our day and age, that is the equivalent of either individual or congregational support of mission work.
Exactly. Very good point. And it could range anywhere from providing a place to stay while a man is in our community in behalf of the gospel to assisting him with money otherwise. And it is very likely that the assisting in that sense is also included here. If someone stayed with you, then you provided him with food and funds to go farther on that trip. That's exactly the point, Carl. Now, look what, see how far, I don't know if I have time to do what I want to do here, but let me just say it this way. In the next paragraph, verses 5 through 8, two things happen. John talks about what Gaius has been doing and then advises him what he should do going forward. All right? So look at verses 5 and 6, first part of verse 6. Beloved, it is a what? A faithful thing that you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are, who testified to your love before the church. All right, now, what is it that Gaius has been doing in his walking in the truth? He's been helping the efforts of these brothers who are strangers. Right? He's been showing hospitality, as we just described. And it has been shown as these brothers who are involved in the Lord's work. This was two things on the part of Gaius. It was a faithful thing. What does faithful mean? By the way, I'm reading from the ESV. Is that translated a different way in the other versions? Any of them? Faithful thing?
Faithfully.
All right. Faithful means trustworthy, reliable, or conforming to the truth. All right. Faithful. It's a faithful thing that you do as you've been doing in all your efforts for these brothers. And these brothers were strangers, but they testified, and this is the second thing, to your what?
Love.
So his love has been guided by truth. It's been shown faithfully in the form of assisting these brothers in the sense that we've just talked about. Now that's what he's been doing. The way this letter unfolds, it would appear that what he has been doing has been criticized by somebody, and they've tried to forbid him from continuing in that practice. And John is writing not only to commend Gaius, but to encourage him to keep on with that faithful work, and to rebuke or to correct anyone who might forbid that. Now, here's a question. Why would anybody forbid that kind of work?
Maybe for jealousy.
It could be. Could be jealousy. It could be, I don't want anybody to be talking about this, about him positively to other people somewhere else. I want to be talked about that way. I want the attention. That could be it. What else? It does. That's what I'm getting at here.
But, I don't want to spend the money.
Right.
I don't think that's a worthy way.
I don't want to have to join in the cost of this myself. I could be part of it. I don't want to be put out like that. What else?
Why waste your money on them when you could be making it here?
All right. Carl, I think you've heard some of these things before. That could be. What else? It could be the idea of suspicion. There could be some of that. We don't know who we can trust, that kind of thing. And that's what I'm getting at, is this is the balance to the problem in the other letter that we're talking. This is the needed balance, the positive to offset the problem in the other in the other letter. It's still, as you've heard some of these statements, it still is a needed balance today as well. So, what do you think when it is announced we're having so-and-so here this evening to report on the work that we help with in that faraway land? What do you think? It's good night for me to try going somewhere else.
I'm going to stay here.
What's on TV tonight? Oh, I know you do. There are a lot of us who do. But I also can't help but notice the attendance numbers on those nights.
I guess from experience, the work and stuff.
Barney goes and has to speak to other places and report about work.
And there are places that have actually requested that we not toggle funds. So, in some cases, people think they're just coming to ask for money. I'm reluctant to say that, but I can't help but not say that.
A Christian missionary told me one time, our problem is getting past the preachers in the congregations who don't want us to come. Our problem is, can you imagine that situation? All right, what were you going to say, Carol?
Regarding other reasons why diocese might not want travelers to come to that area, his friend Payas was giving a good report, but he could very well understand his own family and realize that these people are going to go elsewhere to report about him.
Could be. I'm not doing it, and maybe some kind of report about me is going to be brought. It could be. Well, I kept you a little bit past the bell. Surprise, surprise. Again, hope you guys have a great week, everybody. Finish reading this little letter. We'll be quickly finishing up this journey through the
Israel.